No one can fully explain why we dream. Not Freud, not Jung, no one. Granted, there are recorded instances of God using dreams to communicate his plans, but by and large, dreams are a realm of mystery. And yet we keep dreaming. In 2001, a bipartisan proposal was introduced in the Senate called the DREAM Act, an acronym that stands for Development, Relief, and Education for Alien Minors. The DREAM Act failed to pass in 2001, and again in 2009, 2010, 2011, and 2012. In 2012, then-President Obama established a program called the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, DACA, since Washington loves acronyms. This allowed certain illegal immigrants who entered America as minors to receive deferred action from deportation and allowed for a work permit. As of this year, there are over 800,000 young people, referred to as dreamers, enrolled in DACA. Well, this isn't a dream. This is Cesar's story, and he's here to tell it in his own words. He's more than a dreamer, he's a doer. So, Cesar, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yes, it was our pleasure for you agreeing to do this, and we're excited. Now, here's a little bit of a background that the listeners may or may not know about. Earlier this week, you had an article that was out in Politico. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, I wrote an article with Politico about a few days ago as it went live, and they reached out to me about 2-3 weeks ago. They heard my story to other sources. There are other immigration coalitions that I'm involved in, and they basically just reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to share my story, and I was more than glad to do so.
Awesome. Now, with that, because some of the listeners may not have read the article, what is your story? Like, go ahead and tell us. Like, start from wherever you'd like to start and end wherever you'd like to end.
Yeah, well, basically, with the whole situation going on regarding immigration, I wanted to put a face when it comes to immigration. And from a Christian perspective, I wanted to bring, my main goal through the article was to bring Jesus and compassion back into immigration. Like many others, I'm a DACA recipient, which means a Deferred of Action of Childhood Arrivals.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it means that my parents brought me here undocumented when I was 3 years old. I have no awareness of them bringing me, don't know recollection. I don't remember anything regarding passing the border or anything like that. Yeah. From what I understand is that I was smuggled in through an airplane. American took me in and they pretended that she was my mother, from what I understand. That's all I have information-wise in terms of how I got here. So my whole life, I grew up believing I was an American. Until I turned 16, I was told that I was, the first time I ever heard the word undocumented was in the sixth grade in the hallway. I was told that I was undocumented, and I really didn't know what that meant. I just meant that I didn't have the proper documents at the time in the classroom. And went home and told my father what the school had said, and that's when he first set me down and said that we were undocumented. And of course, like the American mentality I had, the first thing I thought was just like, why would you break the law? Why would you do this?
Mm-hmm.
Well, don't you respect this beautiful country? You know, why didn't you come in the right way? And basically told me that, you know, many reasons. One, they were in a poverty state that they needed to get out at that moment. And then drug cartels were taking over our village. And then two, the government only takes so many amount of ethnics of different race per year, because then there'll be overflow of a certain race in the United States. And so Hispanics is the biggest list. So if we would have applied, it takes about 20 years. Would know, if no one knows you, if you have no degree or no, if you don't know anybody in the political side to speed the process, then you're in the back of the line. And you're looking at about 20 years before they even looked at my dad's application. So I guess you know, as a man, if your children are hungry now and there's persecution going around your community in Mexico, what are you going to do as a man? So I guess from that, I kind of understand that. So when I was brought here, he was telling me all that. And then the first time in my life, I felt ashamed. I felt scared. I didn't look at law enforcement the same because all the stories I heard regarding, you know, if you get pulled over, you get sent back. And so I just grew up a rebellious life. I grew up, you know, my grades trickled down. I was outstanding student in my early years. And somewhere along the way, I guess I lost interest in education and started hanging around the wrong crowd. Because I didn't see a future in education in my parts. Because when I looked at other Hispanics, I just saw that there was construction and illegal and fake IDs and whatnot. And I thought that was my path until these Americans took me in. I was actually throwing a rock at one of their properties, and they called a law enforcement on me. And the town already had enough of me. I was very rebellious. And the old man said, "Hey, I heard about you." And my dad says, "I can't control him. Go ahead and send him to juvie or whatever you need to do. But, you know, he steals my car keys, makes copies of my car keys. I've tried whooping him. I tried disciplining him, but there's nothing I can do." And I guess I look back now, I was really doing all this because of my way of handling the situation. It really it really hit me home because I really thought I was a citizen. I didn't think nothing about it.
Yeah.
And the old man put his arm around me. I remember that. And he said, "How about you pay off your debt? How about you pay off my window damages?" And we called even. And time being the main ingredient, they took me into their home. And I started seeing that they acted a little bit different. There were something about them, the way they carried themselves was truly Christ-like. And I itched to know more about it. So I would tell my dad about it because we were not introducing to about Jesus or anything like that. My dad just believed more like of deism. He just believed there was a God and that was it. But he never really told us the whole relationship part. He just said there's somebody out there, but he gives you hands and feet to work, you know. And that's all I knew about God. But these people kind of took it a step further where you have him in your daily life and your conversations. And so them were the first ones that I really poured out my heart and told them that I was undocumented. And I remember one night that, you know, she was upset because I was about to get kicked out of school because I think I missed so many days and I had to go to court. And I remember that night she ripped her Social Security card and she said, "You know, I'm not going to have a Social Security card until you have one." And for the first time in my life, I was able to put my my face on someone that really cared about my situation. It wasn't more like, "Well, you need to fix it." It was more like, we're gonna fix it together. And ever since then, my perspective that when it comes to immigration was that, you know, I can do something about it. I can make an awareness. I just need to keep clean and do good. And so I went my whole life like that, being undocumented. And these people in the church community sponsored my scholarships. I wasn't able to get any scholarships, so they were my scholarship. They're the ones that would call the school and ask for my school bill every year. And every year somehow I got paid for, you know. And so I was able to concentrate in church planting when I was in school, in college, in Bible colleges. And I've always been like the first, you know, the Bible college that I attended, I was the first undocumented accepted. My work now, where I work for, I was the first DACA recipient accepted into Lifeway. And so, you know, the article basically talks about that. I think sometimes we forget to put a face on immigration. And that's my main goal, is to show that I'm just like you. You know, I have a Hispanic American accent, and I don't know anything else. You know, I don't, you send me back home right now, I don't know where to go.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you telling the story, and we may have a few questions just to kind of follow up with that and kind of see and pick and probe and just hear a little bit more about you to be able to put a voice in this instance for the listeners, to be able to put a voice with something that a lot of times just gets merely politicized rather than personalized. And so we appreciate that. You mentioned that your father, whenever he had gotten the whenever he told you that you were undocumented, you were initially mad at him, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I was I was upset, you know, because I didn't understand it. I mean, the first thing I thought was just like, why didn't you follow the laws? I didn't know anything about the laws. I didn't know anything. I never researched immigration or anything. I just confronted him, and he tried to bring peace into it. But I was just, for a good 2-3 years, me and him had an unstable relationship. We really didn't talk, and every time he tried to mention to me, I down him, and I said, how could you bring me here? Why would you do me like this, you know, kind of mentality. And as I got older and realized that he was actually, it wasn't the right way to come in, mm-hmm. but it was the right way to keep living if we would have stayed there. I feel like if I would have stayed there now, I see my kin folks back in Mexico, and drug cartels have taken over, and everybody's involved in drugs at some level. And I'm in the United States, and I've never messed with drugs and never sold drugs or anything like that. So when I look back now, I kind of saw that my father was lesser of the two evils.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that, you know, because I was thinking about that, you know, most ones who are listening to this, I'm sure they've probably had some kind of teenage rebellion from their mother or father or whomever, and for whatever reason. But now that you've grown into manhood, and that you're supporting, you've got a wife, correct?
Yes.
No children. You've got a dog named Charlie, however.
Yeah.
So
got a son named Charlie.
Yeah. Now that you already alluded to this, what I was going to ask is that, looking back on it now, you mentioned that, hey, that was the lesser of two evils, that there weren't any good options that were faced, and he chose the best option. Have you had conversations with him concerning that to say, hey, you know, Dad, I realize now what you did, and given the same option, I'd do the same.
Yeah, we talked about it right now, especially when the topic of immigration is really hot, even not just in the American community, but especially in the Hispanic community. Mm-hmm. You go through the churches now, and the sermon's all about immigration. You know, you go through the new book that comes out regarding when Hispanics is immigration, how do you handle it? How does a Hispanic handle this? What laws protect an immigrant? What laws don't protect an immigrant? You know, everywhere I go, the first thing I hear is, you know, what can I do, sister? You know, and with my dad, you know, he tells me he understands what he did was wrong, but at the same time, he goes, you had no say-so at the age of three. He goes, so I believe that there should be some pathway to citizenship towards you, or at least some kind of crime that you can pay off your debt with. He goes, with my case, I know what home is. I know what it feels like. But at that moment, we made the right decision for the sake of the family. You know, from a man perspective, he said, if you see your wife starving and crying every night to sleep because she can't eat, and he goes, I remember seeing you guys, you know, going to bed with hunger. He goes, what are you going to do as a man if you see that the fence is greener on the other side? If you see that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence?
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned that there's more than now. Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I'm the middle child. Okay. I have an older sister, and I have a younger brother.
Okay,
and we both came here undocumented. Actually, I was brought here at the age of three. My brother was only about, I would say, a few months old. Mm-hmm. You know, so he literally does not read or write Spanish. I guess you would say he's illiterate in his own native language, if you really think about it like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I feel like he's more worried than I am when it comes to being deported. Because I have been around churches, I've learned a little bit about the Hispanic culture. But when I think of people like my brother Salvador, he literally has no, you know, his best friends, everybody he works works for a good company, and there's no Hispanics in the company. Never had a Hispanic friend. I never had a Hispanic growing up. I grew up, like I said, saying the Pledge of Allegiance, just like everybody else in elementary.
Yeah, yeah, and because you mentioned it was small town Alabama. I mean, it's as Americana as you could get.
Yeah,
pretty much, right?
One red light. I graduated with about 28 students, four boys. We had a lot of girls to choose from, and. But because I was Hispanic, it was pretty hard, you know, to pass a dad there because of the skin color. And I've dealt with some racism at my early ages, but I always thought that was just part of the jokes that people said sometimes. You know, I never mm-hmm. thought that racism was alive like it was until I got into the real world. You know, yeah. I just thought that it was just...
You just thought that it was like friends poking fun rather than somebody truly trying to be
right,
hurtful.
Right, yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah, man, I thought I grew up in a small town.
Small.
Kind of coming off of that question, and you know, your dad you know, saying today that, you know, he knows that he did the right thing and made the right decision. How do you feel about that? You feel like he made the right decision? I know you've kind of explained how you felt at 16 about it when you first found out, but now, as an adult and with a wife and as a man, you know, faced with that same situation, how do you feel like you would handle that?
Yeah, now that if I was in my dad's situation and I had a wife in med school and a kid in med school, I think I would have done the same thing. When I look back, and even now, you know, I get on social media and I see some family in med school, and I see them all, you know, involved in drug cartels and beatings. Just last year, one of my kinfolks was kidnapped by a drug cartel. And people just treat it as a way of life, you know, like, oh, well, that his luck right now, he got kidnapped, you know, and here it's just, it's not, you know, the whole world would flip if someone got kidnapped in your local neighborhood. But over there, it's like, oh, it's just a way of life. You learn to deal with it. So I feel like no father wants their child to grow up in a in an environment like that.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's a much different way of life. And with that being the case, ever since President Trump mentioned earlier this week, now it's Friday, I believe it was mentioned, was it Wednesday? Mm-hmm. Tuesday or Wednesday, in which he mentioned that he's going to give DACA over to the hands of Congress, that he's mm-hmm. going to give it 6 months and see if they can do something with it. What's making you most fearful or unsure about the future that it holds? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that the listener is probably informed that as of this moment that it is rescinded from the executive branch, that it is going to the legislative branch, Congress, in order for them to actually write it into law. Mm-hmm. Are you fearful, uncertain, unsure?
I'm a little bit of both. I mean, one is just sometimes people, when my story went live and it's been blasted through social media, especially through Facebook, and I read those comments that people post. Sometimes they don't, they comment before researching. They comment before actually Googling or researching how to become a citizen, or even, you know, how many people are in line to become a citizen. People just kind of write and be like, well, if he just becomes a citizen, he won't have a problem. You know, I've been here for 25 years and money has not been an issue regarding my family and us. And so, if we could, and we would, already became a citizen a long time ago and paid off the fees to become, but it's not that easy. There's actually no law that allows dreamers like me to become, have a more tangible status. Mm-hmm. As of right now, because I came here undocumented, the law says that I have to go back to my country. Now, because I'm married, people would say, well, you're married to an American citizen. That's true, but my wife has to prove enough hardship for us to stay here. So if my wife can't prove enough hardship, because she's a citizen, not me, so the government wants to know that without your presence, will your wife suffer enough hardship? And we've had over 10 lawyers, and we could never get a case for us because my wife and us, we have no debt. We have investments. The only debt we have is a house. No car payments, no student loans, no nothing. And so, we don't have a child. So the government says, because you don't have a child, there's no hardship. The child will not be affected because mm-hmm. there is no child. Your wife will not be affected emotionally because there's no child.
Yeah.
When it comes, she's in school as well, and I'm paying her school, her tuition. And so we tried going that route, saying, well, if I have to go back to Mexico, then my wife won't be able to continue her studies. Well, the judge ruled that out as well because he said she can get scholarships or get student loans. Mm. We tried the house stuff. They said she can downsize house or government apartments. So we've tried every avenue. Me and my wife just try to make it right. The only way that I could see is actually having a child and then using the child as a token. But that's not what I want to do. I don't want to look at my child consciously and look him in the eyes and says, you know, I had you because you gave me papers. I feel like mm-hmm. I'll be taking faith into my own hands regarding that. I wanted to do it the right way. And if God desires for me and my wife to have a child, I want it to be on his timing, not on a 6-month pressure, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. I believe both, well, I get into political choosing aside, I believe that both parties have not acted, in Congress as well. Like when we think of Republicans, we think of a certain president, we think of Democrat, we think of a certain president, but it really comes down to Congress has not acted. Congress has not made a pathway to citizenship or said what the penalty is. You know, they've just kind of been neutral about it. And so I feel like Republicans and Democrats has been tossing the ball back and forth. And now with President Trump given 6 months, it's like I feel like I honestly feel like a bargaining chip. I feel like a bargaining token. It's just like if you don't give me this, then this is going to happen. And part of it, I think, is a good thing, actually. I believe that at least it's on the table and something will happen in 6 months. In 6 months, I will be somewhere. Either I will be in Mexico or I will be here. So that's something good. But the scary part, I want to be here, you know. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I'm not a building that, you know, that has no emotions. You know, I have emotions. I think about my wife. I think about her stability. We've actually already made decisions and made priorities just in case if I don't. You know, I've always believed you prepare for the worst. And so me and her already are making adjustments in our life and in our financial lives to just in case something does happen in 6 months, because my worker's permit expires in a year. So logistically speaking, if Mr. Trump does say that, you know, or Congress doesn't pass an act, then I feel like Trump will be hated by the Hispanic community. But at the same time, it's not just him, it's Congress that failed to act. And I think that's something that I think sometimes people forget to ask, call their congressman and pressure them to pass some kind of law. But we, once again, I feel like we just act on Facebook and attack people like me without actually knowing the whole story behind it, you know. And once again, my main job throughout this article was to bring compassion, was to bring back compelling. You know, I'm a Christian, just like you are. I'm trying to make it right, just like you are. And just give me the opportunity. Tell me what law, what fee I need to pay for to make it right, and I'm willing to do that. But once again, Congress has not acted.
Yeah, I'm really glad that you mentioned, you know, all of the efforts that you have made. You know, to do things legally and to possibly become a citizen and to do the right thing. I'm really glad you point that out, and you mentioned, you know, Facebook and comments, and since the article has come out and I was made aware of it and, you know, kind of been following on social media, and I too have read some of the comments. And it is... you know, it's amazing, you know, how quick people will jump the gun, you know. And I think it's really cool that you know, because a lot of those comments, you know, were just kind of quick comments of like, well, you've had all this time to do all these things, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really glad that you pointed out, like, hey, man, I hadn't just been sitting around, you know, milking this thing. I have been trying, you know, because I think that's important.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have tried, you know. When people says, well, why don't they just do it the right way? Well, like, we are, you know, Congress, give us a sheet. Tell us
yeah, give
the
us
metrics.
A way.
Give us
yeah.
a way. That's all we ask for. You know, if you tell me to get back in the line, I would do that. But just put me in line and let's make the process happen. If you say I owe a certain fee, tell me the fee and let me pay it off and then give me my status, you know. Yeah. But there's nothing concrete. You know, me and my wife, we were just doing our math the other day. And me and her, just alone, just the last, we've been married for 2 years, and just the last 2 years, we have spent maybe $6,000-$7,000 in consulting with lawyers and advocating for immigration and stuff like that, and yet still have nothing to show for.
Yeah.
Yet I still have a status that's going to be, might be taken away in 6 months.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, funding is not the issue. It's a law that needs to be taken in place by Congress.
Right.
Yeah. You mentioned also social media, that because of the Politico article, which there's been other things that you've been involved in as well, but there's been a lot of traction gained nationally, and there's been a lot of likes and shares, comments, mm-hmm. etc. Since the article has been published, what's some of the more hurtful things that you've read within this past week?
Me personally, not really. I've heard everything from, you know, get sent back to, you know, just in just in the last few days when this article went on blast, from what I understand from Politico, the editor that I've been working with has been had over 1 million likes, has had over 900 shares, and just on the platform that they're using. And I've seen it all. But the one I feel like that takes it the hardest is the people around me. I feel like people that actually know me and know my story tend to defend me mostly than I defend myself. Mm-hmm. You know, my wife, you know, she's quick to act, and I tell her, you know, don't debate or argue with people on Facebook, because then I feel like the article loses its purpose. Mm-hmm. You know, then people mm-hmm. start focusing on the comments rather than the article. I think the last image I want you to leave is what did the article bring out. But if I'm going to argue and comment more, then I should have rewrote my article, because obviously I left something out, right?
Yeah.
It hurts, because, but at the same time, it's been inspiring, because some of the people that I've kind of saw, or actually myself, I've kind of hid their feed on Facebook, because it's been so horrible on some of the stuff. I actually am still friends with them, but I've actually just hid their posts. Some of the ones that have actually wrote me a message and apologized that they didn't know that they were attacking not immigration, but they were attacking me. Mm-hmm. And they felt ashamed. And others, you know, there's other people that, you know, said, Cesar, I love you, but I still feel like the law is a law, and you need to fix it and have a great day, you know. So, and then other people that I kind of just want to write a big paragraph, but at the same time, it's just like, if you choose not to understand, I'm not going to convince that, you know what I mean? Yeah. And maybe when Congress passes that law, they will be more able to bring unity rather than division after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there has been some encouragement in this, is that because people who have previously just had a belief yet never been able to personalize that to say, okay, this does affect a lot of people, and you are one of them, mm-hmm. that there has been some encouragement through,
over 800,
through the article.
Yeah, over 800 people has applied, are recipients of DACA.
Yeah,
800,000 people. Every 2 years, I have to pay $465 to renew it. That's almost $3 billion that the government's making just on application fees.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel like we DACA recipients have contributed, and we have felt encouragement. We, you know, I've been, for the first time in my life, you know, growing up, my dad would always say, you know, when I would go spend at a friend's house, he was not worried about a stranger. He was worried that I'd get deported, or just in case they get deported, they won't be there. So when I wanted to go to out of town and travel with friends, my dad would always didn't say, watch out for strangers. He would always say, hey, remember, you don't have papers. Hey, remember, you don't. So I always had this weight over my shoulder, right? And for the first time with DACA, I felt like I had rights. When the police pulled me over, if I had my driver's license and my insurance, there was no need for something to escalate than it needed to be. And DACA has allowed me to do that. You know, DACA has allowed me to, it makes me feel inspired. These last two, I've had DACA for 4 years. In the last 4 years, once again, me and my wife has been able to invest, and I have squeezed the most out of DACA that I've could regarding investments and taking the opportunity for it. You know, when I started out with DACA, they gave me a, not to get too personal with my finances, but when I started out with DACA, they started me out at a credit score of like 590 or 600. And now recently, me and my wife were able to report with the Immigrant Coalition that my credit score is up in the 800s, you know. So what makes me an American, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I feel like sometimes a fanatic. I tell my wife sometimes I feel like these football fans that are so passionate about a certain team, but they never even attended that university. Mm-hmm. It's like they have everything. Yeah. They have the gear. They have the sticker. They have a tattoo that says Roll Tide or whatever.
Yeah.
But they don't have.
Yeah, you did grow up in Alabama,
yeah,
correct?
But yes. They don't have a diploma.
You know? And I were both guilty of everything he was saying until he said Roll Tide.
Yeah. But they don't have a diploma. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? But here's the thing. I want a diploma. I want a citizenship. Some people don't choose to go to college or will always be a fanatic and be a fan. I just don't want to be a fan. I actually want to be part of the family, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. You'd mentioned in the article, because you had just talked about, okay, DACA gave you a weight that was lifted off of your shoulder. Mm-hmm. Tell them about the first time that you had your driver's license and was just able to drive and just the freedom that that brought.
Yeah, when I remember in high school, I had a car, and of course I drove illegally because I didn't have a driver's license. So every time friends wanted to take road trips, I would always offer to pay the whole gas because I didn't want them to think that I didn't want to drive. It's just that I didn't want to be in a situation where I'm driving and we get pulled over, something happens, and now, you know, here's an undocumented person in a wreck with three white kids, or we just got pulled over in a roadblock, and now it's a bigger deal, and I'm an embarrassment, you know. Mm-hmm. So I remember, I always would find a way to avoid situations where I didn't want to drive. So they always love hanging around me, too, I guess, because I pay for the gas, right? but I did it for precaution more than anything. Yeah. Yeah. So when I was able to drive, a good friend that I grew up running cross country with, he moved down to Panama City Beach. And I told him the situation. He goes, well, dude, come visit me. And I was scared. I was just like, nah, I can't. He goes, what do you mean? He goes, what if the cop? And that's the first thing I said. What if the cop? He goes, dude, you got driver's license. You can go anywhere. Just respect the laws and you'll be here. And I was like, that's so true, you know. But my whole head was wrapped around like, what if? What if the?
Yeah.
What if scenarios? And I just remember driving, and I didn't even get off my little town. And I just remember weeping and crying for from Panama City to from Alabama to Panama City. And I just remember for 6 hours, for every mile, I felt like weight was coming off. Mm-hmm. You know, and people's like, what do you mean by that? Well, it's just like if you find someone that's a little bit chunky, and they lose, you know, sometimes if I hold 10 pounds of weight in my hands, I don't know that it's 10 pounds. But if I wear that on my body all day, after a while, I get used to those 10 pounds. And I felt like that was my case. I had this burden on me for so long, since I was, you know, 16, that I knew that I was undocumented, that in a way, I felt like I got used to it. I got immune to the weight. Mm-hmm. But when I found out how it felt to drive, I looked at cops and I smiled and waved at them, you know, instead of like making a U-turn or cutting a corner real quick, because I didn't know what was going to happen. For the first time, I was looking for cops.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, yeah.
Well, and so when was that? When did you get, how old were you when you like got a legal driver's license?
19 years old.
19?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was around 19 years old. I got the status, but it wasn't easy because it was so many questions. You know, I talked to lawyers and they said, we don't know, it's not permanent. You know, if you take that route, you are going to share all your information.
And this was DACA.
Gotcha. Yeah. Gotcha. And so I kind of waited for a year to see how everybody else was accepted to it and how the company was going to accept it to it. And I saw that it was fine. And that's when I decided to come out of the shadows and apply for it.
Gotcha.
Well, I appreciate you sharing your story.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the listeners are glad to now hear that that they now know someone who is a personalized story to something that has been politicized for quite some time. Yeah. To know that there is 800,000 Caesars that are out there, that the future is uncertain, but the fact that they now know you because you've shared your story. So thank you.
Thank you, guys. And get her done.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, and if you want to read Caesar's article, it's on Politico, Politico Magazine, I believe. Yeah. And what's the title of the article?
I'm a dreamer, but I'm not a...
I can't believe I forgot it. I was brought here at the age of three.
Yeah, I came to America when I was three years old.
And what am I going to do in med school?
Yeah, what am I supposed to do in med school? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so check that out on Politico. You're on social media, right? Can they find you on?
Yeah,
are you on Twitter?
I'm on Twitter.
What's your Twitter handle?
Cesc Roberto.
All right, there Cesc it is. Roberto. Find him on Twitter. We're on Twitter as well @leftoverlunch_ Instagram @leftoverlunch_. We're on Facebook. You can check out our website. We will probably share a link to the article on our website and on our social media. We'll probably have a little write-up and recap as far as our conversation with Caesar.
Yeah, they'll be able to find that at leftoverlunchpodcast.com.
Yeah, check that out. Subscribe to the podcast, Leftover Lunch Podcast. We're on the Apple Podcast app, Google Play Music, all your favorite podcasting apps. Spread the word. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next time.